We want to hear your creepiest character.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago, I had to go to the bathroom really bad at where I worked, and this door just flew. I try to get to the bathroom as quick as possible, and I just kicked the door open, but I didn't expect the tension to be loose on it. So this kind of bird lady is kind of standing in the bathroom just wiping her front, you know?
Her front! Okay.
And, she was this big, tall, redheaded, you know, olive oil kind of character.
Did the curtains match the drapes?
Well, you know, it wouldn't have freaked me out,
Andy,
as much if she just latched the door shut. It had a lock on it.
Well, I'm confused. Was she in the men's room, or did you actually go in the women's room?
No, it was the unisex.
A unisex single bathroom. Okay.
Yeah.
Unlocked.
Yeah, it just...
Wait, so who's the creepy one here?
She could have just latched the door shut.
So
had a lock on it, and she's just wiping her vagina.
So you're the creepy one because you barged into the bathroom.
Well, no, I didn't barge in.
So she's creepy because she was...
Locked.
Oh, uh-huh. She's not creepy.
And,
well, maybe she wanted someone to barge in on her.
Maybe, in which case I guess that is
not
creepy.
Likely, but possible.
I think the scary thing, though, is that she didn't flinch.
Maybe she did want someone to barge in on her.
Oops, I forgot to lock the door.
Come on in.
The door had to slowly close, though. And whenever it was closing, I just go, oh, God, and I just walk away.
Oh, God.
I walk away really quick because it was pretty freaky. And
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right.
Kind of scary.
Thanks for calling, mister. Have a good one.
Good night, guys.
The way he said, oh, God, reminded me of Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate.
Danny,
oh, Mrs. Robinson.
Danny D says, oh, that was funny, Andy. Danny D says the perfect way to end the show is flirt with Frangry.
Really?
Not happening.
Oh, we have just a few minutes.
FMU, you're on the radio.
Hi, I grew up in West Orange, New Jersey, which is a land of creeps.
Those are the people that listen to this radio
and
station.
And Thomas Edison.
Oh, I mean, that's why I'm listening to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm proud of where I'm from, but it is a land of creeps.
Is it, Andy?
It was nice the one time I was there, but I was only there to see the Edison Laboratory.
That's fair. Well, Edison was a creep. He used to kill animals.
Yeah, he was a little creepy. Yeah, he had some weird aspects to him.
Everybody I know who never sleeps is a creep.
There's also a nice ice rink in West Orange.
That's great. Yeah. Thanks, Andy.
Oh, and I bought my handcuffs.
Andy, nobody cares.
I bought my handcuffs at the Kmart there.
Why do you even... I don't want to know why you own handcuffs. That's creepy. You with handcuffs.
It's a Halloween costume.
That's
weird. They don't really lock.
All right, mister. Thanks for calling. Have a good one.
Oh, that's it? Okay.
We're going to stop it. Just West Orange. He's not going to go into more detail.
FMU, you're on the radio.
You do have a lot of calls.
Hey, guys. After the Pants Down Herman, I think you talked about it. You were wondering if there were any ladies' room stories. Well, I have a ladies' room story.
Okay, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, where I worked, we had a lot of electricians, union electricians, in redoing the building.
And talk louder.
Please.
Okay, we...
Please.
So they were working in the building, and one of them was, I guess, changing sex from a man to a woman.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And he kind of looked like a 50-year-old guy, but he wore makeup and earrings, and it was very strange. But he used to use the ladies' room. And the women got very creeped out because he was in there, and he was talking with them, and he still had boy parts, so... They thought it was kind of creepy.
Oh, who cares?
That's a who cares to you?
I would be like, that's awesome.
Have you encountered people like that in real life?
No, I don't think I have. If I have, I haven't. I didn't know.
Okay, because my wife worked
with
one.
My last boyfriend. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I will say that people of that sort are disconcerting. When you realize what's going on.
They make you uncomfortable, Andy?
Well, I don't want to seem prejudiced, but it's until you get used to it. It's,
I think it's cool.
It's odd on first mention. There was a when I lived in LA. There was a store I went to a lot. You know, we had to buy a lot of appliances over for our new apartment when we just got married. And there was one lady there who was in process and was very tall, blonde, unconvincing looking as a woman. But it takes practice.
Okay, that was lovely.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks for calling, mister.
All right, take care, guys.
Have a good one.
You too.
Do you see, since you told me to wait a second, I haven't hung up on anyone?
Yeah, count to one.
I am.
It helps with the flow of the show, don't you agree?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
I think the flow
advice.
Of the show. We need to stop the show soon.
Nah, I'm having too much fun.
We only have 2 minutes left.
Hi, you're on the radio. Make it quick.
Hello. I just wanted to say that my father is really creepy.
Okay, thanks for calling. Have a good one.
We're not going to ask in what sense.
No, because it's a joke. See?
He would make his father sit on his lap.
Yeah, but he was finishing the sentence.
I didn't see where that was going.
It was the opposite of soft.
Okay.
Yeah, see? That's why I hung up on him. You were like, give him a chance.
Your judgment was good there.
Thank you.
All right, one more call, and then we'll end the show.
We don't have any.
We don't have any calls?
No, but somehow we're going to have to decide between Pants Down Herman and the tickle guy.
Literal gay, I can't even write my writing
The gay
here.
Nazi tickler.
Literal gay...
Nazi tickler.
Literal gay tickle Nazi.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Can I win? Can I award them both? I think I can't decide. They are both equally.
You're going to call a tie?
Yeah, I'm calling a tie today.
Well, if you can handle the postage, yeah.
I can. FMU can handle the postage. Okay. We didn't have one last week, so.
I mean, those are two good ones.
Yeah, they deserve a
personally,
t-shirt, both of them.
Literal gay tickle Nazi, I think, is creepier than merely Pants Down Herman.
Both of them are pretty good.
Who may be, you know, a simple fellow with simple needs, and he just needs to, like, pull his pants down when he uses
simple.
A urinal.
All right, Richard, who knows Pants Down Herman, and Joe with the Tickle Nazi Gay Man.
Literal gay tickle Nazi.
You are both my winners. Email me your address and t-shirt size at shutupweirdo@wfmu.org. And I think we're done. Do we have time?
No, I have to end the show now.
All right, fantastic.
I have to remind people that they have been listening to Andy and Frangry on Shut Up Weirdo. And you can comment during the show, as other people have, too much to their great enjoyment and edification, at WFMU.org. We have a website you can check out, shutupweirdo.com, which has all the lists from the people who were mentioned
really?
Last week.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And if you go there, we also have the links to the archive and Facebook. Please go to Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, all that stuff. And you can write us at shutupweirdo@wfmu.org. That's our email address. Up next is Stuff You Should Know, then at 8 o'clock. Mr. Fine Wine. You are listening to The Big One, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, live and archived at WFMU.org. So what are we going to do now?
We're going to end it here.
Yeah, let's end it here.
It's time for Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from HowStuffWorks.com. Tonight, the darkest side of government, as Josh and Chuck discuss government surveillance and watch lists, and then in part two, they discuss the centuries-old tradition of human experimentation. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the Chuck Show. I'm Josh. With me always, of course, is Chuck, Charles W. Chuckers Bryant.
That's weird. It sounded like
star
you said
of the Chuck Show.
It sounded like you said the Chuck Show.
I said it twice.
Stuff You Should Know.
The Chuck Show. Did you hear it that time?
I did.
How you doing, Chuck?
Get out of here. You're fired.
I've been waiting for this day for 3 years.
That would be awful in such, I don't even want to say relief. That sounds awful, but you know how it is. It would be devastating and also my brain can relax. And then the next day I'd be all upset again.
I know what you're talking
about.
You
know what I'm saying?
I used to have an alternative weekly newspaper, and whenever we were up on deadline, and we'd miss the deadline, there was a sense of abject failure that was encapsulated by the greatest sense of relief you've ever experienced.
Good.
Yeah,
I don't want to sound ungrateful.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't think I feel relieved here because we got this.
We got this.
Right?
Yes.
Say, reassure me again.
You got it, buddy.
Okay, good. Chuck.
Josh.
Okay. We should probably chill out a little bit because what we're about to talk about is, to some, a necessary evil.
Yeah.
To others, it's brain dead national security.
Yeah.
That we should have been doing since 1787.
Sure.
And to others, it's an egregious affront to civil liberties of citizens.
Yeah, but you know what I found? I did some research on the ACLU. I haven't found anyone that says, we shouldn't have a watch list.
No.
But it's just like, hey, if you're going to have a watch list,
you're going to do it better than this.
Better than this, yeah.
Yes. That's what I took from the ACLU as well. And I think everybody just assumed I was talking about the ACLU when I said that some people find it an affront to civil liberties. When we were researching this, I had this little tick in the back of my head, right? Mm-hmm. It was burning and saying, like, there was something about 9/11. And it was like, oh, yeah, there were all these different warnings. All these different agencies had information about Al-Qaeda. Apparently, Bush was briefed before, like the month before the New York Times reported back in 2004.
Right.
Al-Qaeda was being watched. We were aware that there was a hijacking plot.
Right.
And there, all of these people, most of them at least, were on watch lists. But the problem is all of these agencies were in the midst of like some serious turf wars.
Right.
And no one was talking to one another. No agency was sharing this information with one another.
Yeah, which is kind of par for the course from what I understand.
Yeah, but I think that changed in large part after 9/11, right?
Let's hope.
If it didn't change in spirit, at the very least it changed in practice on paper, because all those different lists after 9/11 happened were consolidated pretty quickly after 9/11 happened. I think May of 2003, Bush signed something called Homeland Security Presidential Directive 6. And the first one, signed in 2001, I believe, established Homeland Security as an agency.
Right.
2 years later, he signed 6, basically saying, have you read it?
2, 3, 4, and 5 or 6?
6.
Is there a 2, 3, 4, and 5?
Yeah.
Okay, I figured there was.
There's 1 through 25. It loses focus toward the end. The last one was signed on Bush's last day in office. And it basically says, all those international treaties we signed that say the Arctic and the Antarctic belong to everybody, no one can lay a claim on, we revoked the part about the Arctic. We decided that the U.S. is, quote, an Arctic nation, and therefore it has to protect its Arctic interests, specifically natural resources, as a matter of national security.
That's in there?
Yeah. So it kind of lost focus toward the end. But early on, with Presidential Directive 6, that said, we need to take all of these watch lists and create a central watch list, and we need to actually administrate it
sure.
properly.
Yeah, that was big.
And that created, Chuck,
the consolidated terrorist watch list.
Right.
Because it's consolidated.
It makes a lot of sense.
It sure does, doesn't it?
Yeah. So that's the government list that everyone is long joked about. There were lists before, but the one that everybody thought about prior to 2001 or 2003 didn't bear any resemblance to this one. This is the list. Anyone who's ever been even remotely suspected of being a terrorist, what's the language? Engaging in terrorist activities, right?
Suspected to have engaged in conduct constituting in preparation for, in aid of, or related to terrorism.
Yes.
And apparently associating with a known terrorist isn't enough to get you on that list.
Really?
Yeah, because after September 11th, there were not many guidelines. It was just sort of, let's just put a bunch of names on the list.
Yeah.
I mean, not that willy-nilly, obviously. But they realized they needed to refine it over the years. And I think in 2009 mm-hmm. Was the last major revision, a 72-page memorandum, in February 2009, that clarified what the minimum substantive derogatory criteria was.
What is it?
Well, it's a 72-page memorandum.
Right.
But associating with a known terrorist, suspected terrorist, is not enough. There had to be evidence of that you actually supported terrorism. And it generally requires more than a single source, which is good.
Really?
Yeah, like, hey, this one guy said you were, so boom, you're on the list.
Right.
So they've refined it some over the years.
Right. Prior to 2009, I think it was a little easier to get on there.
Yeah.
And that's when a lot of the press was generated about this. A lot of the media was up in arms or reporting sure. about people being up in arms. There were tons of stories and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can kind of tell like how open it was by just the sheer numbers, right? In 2003, yeah. I think the thing opened up for business with 325,000 people, 325,000 names.
Yeah, that was in 06.
Oh, 2006.
Yeah, now there's over a million, supposedly.
See, that number is highly disputed.
It is.
So the ACLU says a million or more.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people reported that, but that's just the ACLU's estimate. The TSA says it's less than 400,000.
I saw that, too.
And they threw in that 95% of those people are foreign nationals.
Yeah. And
but 95%,
most not even in the country, even, they say.
See, I can see them, like, that 95% struck me as the same as saying, like, one of your buddies being like, I'm 99.99% positive,
right.
You know? I wonder how accurate that is.
Yeah, it's hard to get stats on this stuff because a lot of it is kept under wraps.
Yeah.
For a good reason.
Including the criteria.
Yeah.
Who's on there. And yeah, like you said, for good reason. There is, it's Orwellian circular logic. And of course, I think everyone who pressed play on this knew that the word Orwellian was going to come up at least
sure.
once, knowing us, right?
Yeah.
But they are saying that they can't release information on this list because then you know how to beat the list.
Yeah.
And it defeats the purpose.
And I'm a defender of civil liberties, and I will even admit that this is a tough situation because you can't just do everything behind closed doors, but you also can't open it wide open because then it kind of defeats the system in a lot of ways. So
yeah.
This is a tough one.
It is. Very tough.
When it comes to that.
That number of the names on there... it's not necessarily individual people. That's different spellings of single name.
Yeah.
That's aliases of these people. So there could be a fraction of that number of actual people that are on this list.
Right.
But there's all these different spellings or whatever.
Yeah, countries are on the list. Not like entire countries. Well, entire countries, but not saying your entire country is on the list. It's just, I think, countries.
If you're from that country?
Yeah, then you. I think the red flag is raised, not necessarily your, because Israel was on the list recently, and they said, "Oh, that was a big mistake. Israel shouldn't be on the list."
Huh.
Obviously, so yeah, but that just happened, I think, within the past few months.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That would have made a great intro.
Yeah, I liked your intro.
Thanks. Yes. Yeah, so with nominating, right? You said now it takes more than one source to get you on there.
That's what they say.
Apparently, before that revision, somebody from the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, the FDA, the SEC, pretty much any government agency could say...
NASA.
Hey, yeah.
Really?
Hey, I think any government agency, anybody from a government agency could nominate you. And you're nominated, right?
Yes, and that means you're put before, or you physically aren't, but your name is put before the Terrorist Review and Examination Unit. And they start checking things out and then pass you along to the terrorist screening center and the watch list if you are deemed by their criteria to be a threat.
Right. And the terrorist screening center is a branch of the FBI, and they're the ones who are responsible for administering the watch list, right?
Right.
And it's most closely associated with flying. It's a no-fly list is what it's often called.
Well, no, those are two different lists.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, there's a no-fly list, there's a selectee list, and then there's the terrorism watch list.
Okay, lay it on me.
Well, the no-fly list only has like 5,000 people on it.
Okay.
But it's different. But if you're on the no-fly list, obviously you're also on the terrorism watch list.
Right, but as I understand it, if you're on the terrorism watch list, you may pop up when you go through a TSA screening.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So like if you're on this terrorism watch, so if you're on a no-fly list, like they your name pops up and they just take you to prison, essentially?
Well, they can do a range of things from take you away to be investigated and frisked and...
Never heard from again.
Or the people have been arrested.
Right. Okay. So that's... But these are people who are probably like known terrorists.
Or not.
Okay. But on the no-fly list.
Yeah, both. That's what created a lot of the problems is that, you know, like an 8-year-old boy was on the no-fly list and... This lady researched a Muslim woman from, I can't remember where she's from, but she was a Stanford doctoral candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get placed on the no-fly list while you're on vacation, and then you can't come back into the country.
It's like a bad vacation.
There are Army veterans stranded in Colombia and other countries that can't come back because their name is erroneously on the no-fly list.
Hmm.
And it takes a long time to get it off.
I would imagine 67 days... to get off the terrorist watch list, right?
That's the average, but I don't know about that. I bet it takes longer than that.
Okay. So, Chuck, I guess with when you fly also, there's this program called Safe Flight that's administered by the Terrorist Screening Center.
All right.
Where every flight manifest is checked against the lists.
That's good.
It is good.
That's the first step, I guess.
Yeah. But so the Terrorist Screening Center, they're in charge. So are they in charge of the select list and the no-fly list as well?
It's all under Homeland Security.
Okay.
So.
Okay. But this is FBI.
Right.
Okay. So they're maintaining these lists, but they're also tracking the people who are on the list.
Yes.
Hopefully the right people. But if your name apparently is on the terrorist watch list,
yeah,
there is a screen in Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
No one knows where. Well, no one can say where, anyone who knows. And you are a red dot on that screen, and you are tracked constantly. And apparently, I don't know if the dot is red necessarily, but the color changes depending on the length of time it's been since you made contact.
Right.
Or a law enforcement officer made contact with you, like since the last time you flew, last time you got pulled over for a ticket, the last time they came into your house,
right.
Whatever. The color changes. But there's someone who watches you. When you get pulled over and you're on this list, well, if you or I get pulled over, your name's Run, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it pops up, then the law enforcement officer is alerting the terrorist screening center. From what I read, most of the time, the terrorist screening center already knows you just got pulled over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's neato.
And that's NPR's reporting, too. And it was Dina Temple Raston who actually went to the center. So
right, right.
It's not like rumor.
Yeah, and I hope we don't come across as saying like, oh, they shouldn't do like police terrorists and things like that, because it's not the case.
I don't think so.
Okay. Although John Lewis, the name John Lewis was on the no-fly list.
John Lewis, he's I think he's still a representative here, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
From Georgia. From Atlanta, I believe. He was a civil rights leader as well, and his name was on there. He kept getting hassled going through the airport, and not because he was suspected of any kind of terrorist activity, but because his name matched one of the spellings of a name of somebody on the terrorist watch list, right?
As did every other John Lewis.
So, right. So if you are... that's one good way to find out that your name is likely on the terrorist watch list.
Right.
Is getting held up at the airport.
Yeah.
John Lewis isn't the only one. Very famously, there was a nun named Sister Glenn Ann McPhee, right?
Yeah.
And she apparently spent a lot of time getting interrogated, so much so that the Council of Bishops called the White House and said, you got to take her off.
How much was she flying is what I wanted to know.
I don't know.
Since she was hassled a lot, it's like, I didn't know nuns like traveled that much.
Sure. The sister of the Flying Cross.
Of the Flying Nun?
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, there's an 8-year-old famously in New York. And even though they came out and said there are no 8-year-olds on the list, it's a myth. There is an 8-year-old on the list. I don't know if he still is, but the parent said, no, he's right here. Come meet him. He's a Boy Scout. And the first time he was pulled aside and frisked was when he was 2.
Wow.
At an airport, 2 years old on the terrorist watch list was frisked.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
So that's led to a lot of calls about reducing the watch list, making it more focused.
Yeah.
And apparently it sounds like Obama made those changes in 2009, right?
What was that? What happened there?
Well, what you were talking about, like it's the criteria is narrowed a little more. Like it takes 2 sources to get you on the list.
Yeah.
Just associating with somebody will keep you off the list. And then I wonder if redress has gotten any easier.
I don't know. Redress is the process of like sort of applying to get off the list. And that's for the terrorism watch list. Apparently the no-fly list, there is not much of a process going on there. And it's led to a lot of frustration from people like John Lewis.
Right.
But, yeah, now you apply, and I think you have to apply through the agency. You can't just call the FBI. Or, no, you can't call Homeland Security. You have to apply through the agency that gave you trouble.
Gotcha.
Like the TSA or whoever it is.
Gotcha. And then they give you what's called a redress number. So when you book travel, you include that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and it's basically like I've been cleared. Here's proof.
I'm sure you're not on any list then.
So, Chuck, how do you get on this list, aside from the obvious of being a known terrorist or a suspected terrorist,
well,
appropriately suspected terrorist?
You could be a member of some sort of extremist organization,
mm-hmm.
like even a hardcore like environmental organization might land you on the list.
Like ELF?
Yeah. What are they?
Earth Liberation Front?
Yes.
They like to burn down subdivisions that are built over clear-cut forests.
Oh, really?
Really, they like to burn down any subdivision where any trees are sacrificed or whatever. You know, the kind where they go in and cut all the trees down, build everything, and then go replant like little saplings?
Right.
Those kind of subdivisions?
Yeah, yeah.
ELF likes to go in before they're populated and burn them all to the ground.
Really?
And then maybe leave a garage standing and spray paint ELF on it.
So that's
domestic terrorism, really. I mean,
yeah, the Order of the 12 Monkeys.
It is, isn't it?
Sort of.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're a member of ELF, if you're like a member of, I would imagine, any group that's been deemed a hate group or an extremist group,
yeah.
a domestic group.
You might be on that list.
You're probably on the list. But, again, I think most people accept that, at the very least, American citizens are in the minority on the government terrorist watch list, right?
Yeah, which is what I was trying to say, which is why it's easy for 98% of their people or 95% to say, like, oh, what's the big deal? Wait till you're one of those 5%.
Right, sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You found some other ways, too, though, some, like, more mundane ways?
Yeah, sadly, I shouldn't say sadly. I found it on Maxim. There's some good...
The men's magazine?
Yes. There was some... I just did a Google search. It's not like I was like, what does Maxim have to say about this?
Right.
There was... There were four that I found that I thought were pretty good. One is searching using Google could get you flagged. We can be watched under the Patriot Act.
Searching for certain terms, I guess?
Yes.
Okay.
We
do a lot of research, man. That's kind of scary to think about.
Well, I imagine that, like, if that's the case, then, yeah, just researching for this podcast got us flagged.
Exactly.
Last-minute flights, apparently. After a certain number of last-minute flights, you will be flagged. And even just doing your immediate flight, like just the first time you do it, they're going to pay extra attention to you.
Right.
Because you're booking a last-minute flight.
Right.
And apparently patterns. The government loves patterns. And if you're operating within a normal pattern, you're likely going to be less scrutinized.
Okay.
When you suddenly book a last-minute flight. Then they're going to be like, wait, that's abnormal, and we're going to pay attention to you. Or if you pay with cash, that's abnormal.
Right.
We're
going
to pay attention to you.
Right.
There's certain patterns that the normal average person does without even thinking, and when you act outside of that, then you're going to invite more scrutiny. Apparently, email as well is also under the Patriot Act, likes to be watched. So if you say something stupid on there.
Yeah.
So basically, you and I are on the list.
the Homeland Security this week said that the terror watch list is exempt from the Privacy Act, which was brought about after Watergate. It basically permits citizens to obtain files about them with the intent of correcting it, which is what this would be all about.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we're not under the Privacy Act.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem with the ACLU is put a system in place. First of all, like you said, they think it's bloated.
Yeah.
And
2009 Justice Department Inspector General report.
Yeah.
Found that 35% of the nominations to the list were outdated.
Yeah. So it's like it's counterproductive even. It's not like they're just saying it's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not doing the job that it should be doing if it's bloated. But their whole point is just have a system in place, a transparent system in place where you can I guess redress is that for the terrorism watch list, but it doesn't sound like it's a very good system.
Well, they also have a really big bone of contention in that this is technically unconstitutional. There's something against unlawful search and seizure without due process or at least probable cause.
Right.
And if you're an 8-year-old Boy Scout, there's really no way of justifying the fact that you're being searched without probable cause, you know?
Right.
Just because there's terrorists out there doesn't give probable cause to some individual who's not a terrorist to be searched.
Right.
It's kind of that simple.
Yeah.
But again, as you say, it's really tough to say, oh, we need to just do away with this.
Sure.
I don't think that's the case. I just think there's better ways to do it.
Yeah, on this, I got a couple of more startling things. On the state level, you know, you can't profile, federal policies prohibit that, and you can't on the state level either, but they allow states to, they have different criteria for each state on what is deemed suspicious, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily this will get you nominated, but red flags, at least. And in Ohio, any immersion in, immersion in a purely Muslim environment could get you red flagged.
Wow.
They advise landlords in some states to be alert on tenants who prefer ground floor apartments and who have little furniture. And then anyone, the study of technical subjects like engineering. Just engineering.
Huh.
It's interesting.
Do you remember when the Patriot Act was first being discussed? For like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
One of the mandates in it was that postal employees were expected to spy and report on people on their route. And the post office actually pushed back and said, we're not doing that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And they won. It was taken out. But it was in there, like, they wanted to deploy the postal service as domestic spies.
They're like, dude, we just don't want to get bit by dogs. That's all we're asking.
We got enough on our plate as it is.
I got a redress stat for you, too.
All right, Chuck.
That Conger found. This is written by Kristen Conger from
Stuff Mom Never Told You.
Yeah, and she's got a new host we should mention.
Yes.
New co-host.
Yeah.
Molly is no longer there, and they're doing a great job with the
new host. And best of luck to Molly.
Yeah, of course.
She's writing her heart out right now.
Yeah, sitting right next to you.
Yep.
Anyway, Conger found this stat, and from 2005 to 2007, 35% of people who complained that were on the redress list, I guess filed for redress, were kept on the list. 45% were either granted lower security or removed. And that's only how many? 80%?
80%. The other 20 were never heard from again.
That's what I wondered. It doesn't have anything about the other 20%.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny and all that. Like but again, it would stink if you're on that accidentally. But at the same time, we're also talking about the same government that operated like secret prisons overseas too. For a while.
Yeah, or if you're one of these veterans that's stuck in Colombia.
Who are you talking about?
There's this one ACLU article I mentioned found there are two Army veterans that are stuck outside the United States. And then the New York Times article was that lady with her 14-year-old daughter was stuck in Malaysia for a while.
That's crazy.
And a UK officer, because different countries have their own watch list, and Britain has one.
Mm-hmm.
He got his wife put on the list so she couldn't come home.
Wow.
She's been in Turkey for 3 years until they found out about it.
Wow.
And then he was fired. Like, he was set to get promoted, and they were like, wait a minute. They were doing their research. They were like, your wife's on the no-fly list. And he's like, what?
Blimey.
And she's been in Turkey for 3 years, so.
That's funny.
It's an interesting way to get out of whatever he didn't want to do.
Yeah.
Taking out the garbage.
Right. That's what it was.
He just got trash piled up now.
He's like Sylvia
Plath?
No. Shel Silverstein poem where the girl doesn't want to take the garbage out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sylvia something silver suit snout or something like that. Yeah, well. And then Chuck, lastly, what do you want to, like, if you want to know, obviously we're not on the list, or we weren't the last time we flew because we flew. Nobody took us aside. Although, Yumi and I now always get pat-downs.
Oh, really?
I just don't trust that backscatter thing. I don't think everybody knows enough about it. I'm sure it could be fine.
Oh, you're given the option and you request the pat-down?
Every time, yeah.
Interesting.
And I have to say, they almost never use the metal detector anymore.
Really?
Never.
Huh.
So, yeah, we always do the pat-down now. And it's nice. You get to know the TSA agent a lot more, more closely.
As they're patting you down with the backside of their hands.
Yeah. And telling you what they're doing ahead of time.
Right.
It's like,
I'm going to touch your waistband.
You know how to build up a sense of tension, don't you?
Yeah.
So what do you, if you want to know if you're on this list, you can just fly, right? Try to go fly. That's going to do something.
It's kind of an expensive way to do it, though.
It is. If you've been pulled over and not detained for like speeding or something like that, if you just gotten a standard ticket, your name's not on this list.
Yeah.
You're not on this list.
True.
And if you are on, you can apply for information about yourself, not through the terrorist watch list, but through something called the specifically designated nationals and black persons list that the Treasury has.
Oh, that means you can't do business, right?
Exactly. You can't get a loan. You can't. Yeah, you can't do business with these people. It's a way of freezing somebody out of dealing in the United States, making money in the United States, usually because they're some sort of criminal, right? If your name's on that list, there may be a high likelihood that you are on the terrorist watch list.
Right.
And even if you're not, you want to get your name off that list because...
if you want to do business. If,
yeah, eventually somebody's going to be like, I can't loan you this money,
nice
Mr. Escobar.
Josh, I thought it was good.
It was not good. I wasn't prepared.
I think
you saved us.
No, I think this was... It always gets so tricky with... these civil liberties podcasts, because it's, you want it both ways. You don't want terrorists coming into the country, but you also don't want your friend who's just a friendly Muslim to be on the list.
Right.
It's tricky ground. I don't know how I feel about it. You?
Personally, between you and me, if...
and the other half a million people listening.
As long as it's amounting to little more than an inconvenience and there's still pressure to make it better, to do a better job of this,
yeah,
I'm for the list.
But
for maintaining a list.
Yeah, but being stuck in another country is...
Yeah, my personal experience.
Sure.
Until some terrorist named Josh Clark ends up on the list, then I'm cool with it.
And you're stuck
in
Turkey.
I'm Bob Smith from Iowa. if you want to know more about the terrorist watch list and probably end up on the terrorist watch list yourself, JK, you can type in government watch list in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. You could also probably search that on Maxim, too. It'll bring up some stuff. And since I said Maxim, that means it's time for listener mail.
Oh, I thought it was going to be time for top 10 sexiest broads on reality TV.
I'm sure it is on Maxim. If this were a Maxim podcast, for sure.
Boy, I can't believe they had... I bet you that article that they had like, not clip art, but the stock photo of some guy, like, kind of half drunk on a plane, some bachelor, like, arguing with a stewardess.
That's in it's in the last one about email, that's saying that, like, if the plane on the way to spring break is delayed, it should yell, like, bomb or fire so they can get off and then drink.
Yeah.
Which is a very Maxim thing to do.
That's a Maxim, if I ever heard one. All right, Josh, I'm going to call this. Did you call for listener mail?
Yeah, you did.
Did we hear the ding?
Yeah. It was in there somewhere.
I'm going to call this a very sweet email from a sister about her sister.
Oh, I was hoping we would do this one.
I think this
was sweet, too.
I've been meaning to write for a while now, but haven't found an episode I thought it could contribute to. Then I realized how much the entire podcast means to me. My twin sister is married to a Marine. They move all over the country. She's currently in Hawaii. We miss each other dearly, and it may sound funny, but your show makes us feel a little closer. We especially enjoyed the Shrunken Heads episode. You had a good flow, and we're both very witty. We even call each other Skullbag as an inside joke. The spam episode made us laugh. My sister's name is Tony Ann, and in high school, she was nicknamed Tony Spam because of the rhyme and her affinity for the canned pork product.
It just made sense.
Yeah.
All around.
She actually went to Spam Jam last spring, I guess in Hawaii, of course, and was a little disappointed that it wasn't as much fun as she expected.
That's a very serious event.
Oh, is it?
I don't know what she was expecting.
Right. We have so many inside jokes pertaining to your show. We run with Josh and Chuck. We hang at home with Josh and Chuck. And I think our friends are starting to think we are actually friends with Josh and Chuck. Anyway, although we are 6,000 miles and 6-hour time difference apart, we love to listen to the show each week and talk about all the jokes and the content. Thanks for bringing my other half a little closer every Thursday. I wonder if she knows about Tuesdays. She's missing out on half the fun. If you could read this letter, I know it would mean the world to my twin. If not, I'm just happy to know you all know that your show helps make our separation a little easier. One half of a Stuff You Should Know fan, Melissa, from Babylon, New York.
That is very sweet.
And I guess Tony Ann in Hawaii, Tony Spam.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tony Spam and Melissa, for listening to us and discussing what we say. That still, after 3 years, is just out there to me.
What?
The people talk about things that you and I say.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
We're in a bubble in here.
Yeah. if we are overlooking some huge pratfall to being on a government watch list, or there even being a government watch list, let us know. We want to hear your stuck on the no-fly list stories, the terrorist watch list stories, whatever you got. You can tweet to us, SYSK Podcast. That's our Twitter handle. Visit us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can always send a good old-fashioned email to us via stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode entitled How to Land on a Government Watch List, originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on August 18th, 2011. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for part two, Josh and Chuck examine human experimentation. This episode was originally podcast on December 31st, 2011.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. Happy New Year, too, huh?
Yeah.
That's Chuck Bryant, Charles W. Bryant.
Baby fellow... New Year himself?
Yeah. He's always chubby.
He? Me?
No. Oh. Baby New Year, Chuck.
Yeah, with the ears.
Yeah.
Poor kid.
And he always has, like, kind of curly hair, which I'm not partial to.
Yeah, you know, growing up, watching the little claymation Happy New Year baby thing? The Baby New Year? Remember with the huge ears?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what I was just talking about.
Yeah.
That was, like, the little stop claymation...
Like Rudolph?
Yeah, but there was the one for New Year's, and it was the baby that had the huge ears. When he took his hat off, his ears would pop out, and everyone would chastise him.
What did it sound like when he took his ears out?
That's
was it like that?
What it sounded like, actually. But I always felt bad, because I thought it was a cute little claymation baby.
Yeah. Was that the crux of it, that like he just had big ears and everybody laughed at him?
Yeah, I can't remember how it ended. He finally found a home or something. I don't know.
Yeah, good, because there's nothing sadder than a homeless baby on New Year's.
Yeah, with big ears.
Chuck...
Josh.
Have you ever heard of Herophilus?
I have.
Okay. You want to talk a bit about Herophilus?
Sure. Journey back to 4th century BC, or as you like to say, BCE.
Yeah.
The new BC.
Right.
He's known as the father of anatomy.
Yeah, and one of the ways that he became known as the father of anatomy was by vivisecting live human beings.
Yes. Live... Well, I was about to say a live cadaver, but a cadaver is dead. So
sure.
Live human patients dissecting for science.
Right, and I believe
while
they were
writhe in pain.
They were criminals, right?
Many times, yes.
So we're talking about human experimentation. We're basing this on an article written by the fine, esteemed writer Robert Lamb. And he starts out page zero with this account of Herophilus cutting through the eyeball.
Yeah.
Of a guy who is strapped to a table,
mm-hmm.
and I guess something stuffed in his mouth to muffle the screams, but his eyeball is being dissected in front of a group of surgeons by Herophilus.
And can I read this one line?
Yeah, please do.
Once more, the master pot's flesh enters the bloody maze of arteries and muscle.
I know. We should have gotten RL in here to read it himself.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
So, yeah, apparently this guy that Robert's writing about, this victim, was one of more than 600 that were vivisected at the hands of Herophilus
mm-hmm.
over the course of his lifetime, right?
Yes, live prisoners.
Yeah, so that's kind
horrific.
Of sickening. It is horrific.
Right.
But it was apparently par for the course, right?
Yeah, at the time, sure.
So all these people, why would you dissect a live person or vivisect a live person? I think it's dissect if it's dead and vivisect if they're alive.
Is it?
I believe so.
Well, I mean, there's reasons for it. You wouldn't want to justify it, but they were doing that because sometimes you just need a human to perform an experiment on, and sometimes a cadaver doesn't do the job, and before there were scruples, they would, you know, do it on a live person instead of like an animal test.
Right. Apparently back in Herophilus's age also, they thought that air was carried in the circulatory system rather than blood.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because if you vivisect a person, blood comes out.
Sure.
Although I imagine air does too, since you can't see it. They're like, oh, well, it's air. This is just something.
And this guy's the father of anatomy?
He is.
Come on.
Here's the big ironic twist. All of his writings that he, all the notes he took, all the scholarly works he created based on the deaths or the intolerable pain experienced by these 600 people
mm-hmm.
were all lost.
Yeah.
When the Library of Alexandria burned in
272 AD.
Yes. This is rapidly devolving into a sound effect show somehow.
Yeah. It's so
should we tell people what that is?
Sure.
Jerry got us a little gift for Christmas, a little sound machine.
And the funny thing is that she asked us to keep it on the DL, and we just told 100,000 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other funny thing is that she actually said we could use it. I thought she was going to say, well, here, but you can never use this.
Right. Yeah, and she encouraged us to use it as well.
Right.
So, Chuck, the idea of somebody writhing under the knife while a guy like Herophilus or anybody else with a sharp, sharp object cuts his eyeball open to examine the nerves inside... is a pretty horrific idea.
Indeed.
And the problem is this kind of thing didn't end in AD 272.
No, it continued on.
Apparently, history is littered with human experimentation.
Yes, so much so that there were body-snatching problems in the 19th century because medical schools needed... bodies.
Right. You couldn't, in the 19th century, by the 19th century, you couldn't vivisect anybody.
No.
You weren't supposed to.
Sure.
And also, because of the puritanical ideals, you couldn't do any kind of dissection on cadavers.
You're right. Now, of course, you can.
Right. Which is a good move.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, there was a lot of grave robbing going on to supply the medical schools who still needed this knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And wanted it and were willing to pay grave robbers for it.
Yeah, big time.
Do you remember back in 1989 when they found some bones, actually 9,800 bones in the basement of Medical College of Georgia?
Really?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah, they dated back to the 19th century and
wow.
They were linked to robbed graves.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Isn't it?
It is. So... Well, you know, that's if you're dealing with cadavers. If you're there, also, if you wanted to experiment on a live, living thing, then you would now have to go the route of like chimps and rabbits and mice, rats.
Right. Which actually, what we've done, from what I understand, is with human experimentation, we've put lower, I'm making air quotes here, lower species,
yeah,
in between us and initial discovery. Right.
Yeah, the problem was back in the day, though, they did the same thing, but they considered lower species other humans.
Specifically convicts.
Yeah, or poor and destitute, diseased.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
But convicts, for sure.
Convicts have pretty much always gotten it pretty bad as far as human experimentation goes. But yeah, so these days we do put rabbits and rats and, mm-hmm. and chimps and macaques in between us and, you know, not knowing
yeah.
what a drug will do or something like that. But really, ultimately, it still ends up to humans.
Sure.
And one of the reasons why is because, you know, you can't... we don't even know whether or not animals experience happiness. You know, do they... How can we figure out if they're hallucinating?
Yeah, you sure...
They it can't self-report.
That, yeah, you got to ask questions every now and then.
Right, and then also, I mean, if you're making a drug for humans, you eventually have to find out exactly what it does to a human. It's
right.
not going to have the same effect on a rat, although it'll probably be close.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in a minute.
All right.
Should we talk about some of the horrific things that have happened throughout our history, Josh?
Well, don't forget the... Hold on. There's another route you could take.
Oh, yeah. I know it. Self-experimentation.
Yes.
Your living self, experimenting on yourself.
Which, I mean, there have been some famous examples of this.
Yes, famously, Pierre and Marie Curie earned a Nobel Prize in physics for
right.
radiation research.
Yeah.
And they did this by taping radium salts to their skin and seeing what happened.
Right.
So that's one way to do it.
Another guy who famously tried his research out on himself is Albert Hofmann.
Oh, really?
The guy who created LSD.
Right.
And apparently he had a diary where he writes about his bike ride home after injecting himself with LSD.
And he had no bike.
Right, I'll bet. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, he had a bike, but he was gotcha. Like, wow, nothing is real.
Yeah.
And I really feel like listening to Pink Floyd right,
right.
now. Yeah.
The yet-to-be-discovered Pink Floyd.
Yet to be born, I think, even.
Oh, yeah.
So, Chuck, self-experimentation has its own flaws, right?
Oh,
if you're vivisecting an eyeball and you do it to yourself, you can't do that more than once.
No.
You probably wouldn't even do it that one time.
Yeah.
So really there is a lot to be gained from vivisecting human beings. We don't do it. And one of the reasons why is because it's horrific. So, yes, let's talk about some of the horrific human experiments that litter history.
J. Marion Sims. Does that name ring a bell?
No.
That is considered to be the father of gynecology.
Oh, yeah, J. Marion Sims.
Sims. And he even became the president of the AMA in 1876.
Right.
But he developed experimental surgeries by testing them on African slaves many times without anesthesia.
Yeah.
Dark side for sure, man.
Yeah, I would definitely call that a dark side.
Yet he gets lauded probably in many circles still today.
He does. Apparently, that was... We think of the Nazis especially, and we'll talk about them in a minute, but the U.S. has a really shady history of human experimentation. A guy named Dr. Leo Stanley injected prisoners at San Quentin with animal testes to slow or reverse aging, which did not work out.
Yeah.
And
1906.
Yeah.
Cholera experiments on in the Philippines conducted by us.
Uh-huh.
1915, pellagra experiments in Mississippi.
Right. And then apparently we were talking about how prisoners have always gotten a bad rap. Up until the 1970s in the United States, pretty much all pharmaceuticals were tested on convicts.
Yeah.
So you did not want to break a law.
No.
I wonder, you know how people harken back to like the golden age when there was less crime and less violence and
right,
all that?
Sure.
I wonder how much of it had to do with the fact that if you went to prison, like you would be experimented on.
Yeah. I wonder if you know that, though. It probably wasn't widely reported until you get to prison. Then you're like, oh, oops.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Had I known.
Right. But I imagine recidivism rates, that's a bonehead word.
Yeah.
Were pretty low.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So, Chuck, you know, also the United States was huge into compulsory sterilization, right?
I did not know that.
The eugenics movement.
Oh, okay.
So between, I guess, the early 1900s, the first decade of the 20th century, up until the 70s, I think maybe even 1981, 64,000 people in the United States were sterilized against their will.
Like wow.
Epileptics, the mentally handicapped, the blind, deaf, mutes, schizophrenics, and Native Americans.
Right.
Against their will, sometimes unknowingly.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, which that's not necessarily an experiment because you know exactly what's going to happen. The person's going to be sterilized.
Yeah, true.
But if you look at it as eugenics, it is kind of a larger experiment to basically create a great race.
Right.
And then the eugenics, the popularity, I mean, it was well known this was going on. This wasn't a secret government program.
Right, like MKUltra.
Right, and there was public support for it until World War II, which remember... actually, can you remember to the future?
Yes.
When we talk about mercenaries.
Right, right.
World War II changed everything, right?
It did. Yeah, the Nazis really led the way when it comes to human experimentation. As everyone knows, against the Jews, gypsies, anyone they felt like targeting, they would do things like freezing them to research hypothermia.
And that actually that became huge later. Their hypothermia research is like really used still.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, and we'll get into the ethics of that. They put them in compression chambers to test the effects of high-altitude flight.
It doesn't get much worse than that.
And sterilization experiments as well, like the U.S. was doing.
Mm-hmm. They would use incendiary phosphorus devices to figure out how to treat phosphorus burns.
Japan was another country.
Yeah.
Their Unit 731, very famous unit, reportedly killed more than 10,000 Chinese, Korean, and Russian POWs.
Yeah.
To develop biological weapons and test the stuff out on them, basically.
Right. So the Nazis in particular faced the music at Nuremberg, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there was this part to the Nuremberg trials called the Doctor's Trials. And I think a bunch of the guys, like 17 were convicted, and most of them, I think, were hanged.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of these guys' cases were, we didn't break any laws. There's no lawful outline of what to do when you're experimenting on a human.
Right.
And a lot of this stuff followed the same kind of protocol that we had before the war, right?
Right.
Which is just horrendous, but in a lot of cases it was actually true, right?
Sure.
So one of the results of the Nuremberg trial was the Nuremberg Code, where the international community said, all right, we need to outline some guidelines for human experimentation.
Right.
And I think there's like 10 points to it, 10 large overviews to human experimentation guidelines, and it focuses on reducing fear and pain,
right,
and discomfort in the experiment subjects. They can't be coerced. It has to be willing. They have to be informed.
What's this covered by? What's that under? Do you know? Like what document or organization that's under?
I don't.
Yeah.
Probably the UN.
Okay.
I would think the UN would have something to do with that.
Yeah, you would think so.
But yes, but it's very famous. It's called the Nuremberg Code, right? And it solves like the moral quandary. Did you ever see Extreme Measures, Gene Hackman, Hugh Grant?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so you know, like in the end, I think they're in a sewer somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Hackman's like, if you had to kill one to save a million,
sure,
wouldn't you have to do it? And so the Nuremberg Code solves that. And the answer, by the way, is no, you wouldn't kill one.
Yeah, that's the age-old question, though.
Right.
Kill one to save many.
Which is a very utilitarian view of looking at things. Like, yes, you kill one person to save a million. Of
yeah,
course you do. But right, we, as an international collective, have decided that you don't do that. One person's life is worth as much as a million people's potential lives.
Right. So that brings us to the real quandary, though, with human experimentation is, what do you do with this information that is gained from these awful, awful experiments?
Right.
A lot of detractors will say that to use this information supports human experimentation.
Right. But then another way of looking at it is to propose, like, kind of do a thought experiment of, all right, let's say that you walk in on one of these experiments and you say, your death is inevitable,
mm-hmm,
and it's going to be a painful, horrible death. But you can choose whether or not this data that results from your death is suppressed or used.
Right.
Which one do you want?
Well,
and then,
yeah,
you know, most people would say, well, if I'm going to die anyway,
sure,
I would want this data to be used. That's the argument the other side uses.
Yeah, the U.S. cut a little deal, though, with U-731.
I know. We have such a shady history. Like, we used Nazi scientists to get us to the moon.
Well, this was particularly to keep it from falling into the wrong hands. So we thought, hey, rather than give that to the Russians, Unit 731,
mm-hmm,
let's cut a deal where the officers responsible for this get immunity from prosecution and war crimes, and we get the data. And we'll even give you a little stipend.
Yeah.
On the side.
We'll give you some money.
Yeah. That probably wasn't
way
reported
to come up with those biological weapons. Nicely done.
Right.
Like we said, the Nazi hypothermia experiments, which were pretty brutal. Apparently, they would put you in an icy vat of water.
Right.
With a thermometer in your rectum.
Uh-huh.
And they found that most people went unconscious and died around when their body temperature hit 77 degrees Fahrenheit, right?
Yeah, it's such useful information, but...
No, the useful information came in they were looking for ways to revive people suffering from hypothermia because the Germans were losing so many people,
right,
on the Eastern Front in Germany.
Uh-huh.
That they actually did figure out ways of quickly reviving people suffering from hypothermia. So post-war hypothermia researchers are like, dude, these people... As ghastly as these experiments are,
right,
they figured out how to revive people suffering from hypothermia. We need that information.
Right.
So I think with that, I guess that group leading the charge, Nazi data,
mm-hmm,
has been used in a lot of ways, but then it should be cited, I think, was the compromise that they,
right,
came up with.
Yeah, and it actually worked the other way, too. Jewish doctors would later study victims of starvation in the ghetto, in the Warsaw ghetto.
Right, yeah.
And they use that to aid in the study of hunger-associated disease.
Right.
So they found a way to use it at least.
Right. And so we were talking also about how the U.S. has a nice long history of horrible stuff,
mm-hmm,
like the Tuskegee experiments. You want to talk about that?
Yes, a 40-year study of syphilis began in 1932. And they use African Americans who sought treatment for this disease, and they basically straight up lied and deceived them, thinking they were being treated.
Right. They actually didn't use any kind of medical intervention.
No.
Because they wanted to watch the progression of syphilis.
Yeah, they wanted to see it gets worse, and so they could chart everything out, and they had no idea.
And then I guess finally in 1997, the U.S. issues a public apology for this. And there's,
right,
still some people alive who were,
really,
experimented on.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've documented the LSD experiments that unsuspecting Americans were dosed in the MKUltra project. We did a whole show on that, didn't we?
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Of course, yeah. It was like our best one.
It was one of the...
Didn't we? Did you forget?
Well, it was a long time ago, man.
So, yeah, well, you were kind of out of it, if you remember the beginning of that one.
Was I?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
We did a little role-playing.
So, Chuck, there was kind of a huge sea change in the way that human experimentation was looked at and carried out when the FDA was established in the 30s.
Sure.
So all of a sudden, there were review boards and, right. and panels. The universities kind of stepped in and said, all right, we play a big role in this. We're going to start establishing stricter oversight of human experimentation. And so that's kind of the course that we've followed since then, right?
Yeah, they're called drug trials.
Drug trials, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know any human guinea pigs?
No, I've never done it. But, you know, phase one drug trials is usually where you'll get the most folks because you need healthy individuals.
Right, who are willing to risk their health for money.
And basically what they're doing in these phase one trials are, you know, when you see these commercials that rattle off 100 side effects that are positively frightening,
mm-hmm.
they get these from giving these medications to people and seeing what happens, basically.
Right, yeah. Robert Lamb put it really well. He said that if your bottle of medication says that it might result in bowel control problems or suicidal thoughts, you can bet that someone received a paycheck for experiencing them at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
How else would they know?
Yeah.
So that's phase one. Phase two deals with dosing and efficiency, and phase three enlists actual patients who need this treatment.
Right.
Not healthy people.
And people who volunteer for phase one clinical trials are handsomely paid, depending on the risk involved.
That's one of the problems.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's kind of like a vacation. You're fed and you're put up maybe in a hotel or the hospital room has, like, a video game console. You watch movies or whatever, and they just shoot you full of something and then come in, like, every 15 minutes or hour or whatever and say, you know, like, have you seen that leprechaun you were talking to earlier again? You know, that kind
of
stuff.
But that's one of the problems is that some of these folks bounce from experiment to experiment and, you know, kind of make a half-assed living off of this.
Right. I guess you can. I mean, especially if you're dedicated. He talks about, Lamb talks about an article in The New Yorker that is about, it's called guinea pigging, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And it's about this subculture of clinical drug trial participants who have their own, like, publications that show, like, who's what upcoming drug trials are in the pipeline and how much they're going to pay and that kind of stuff. So there's a concern that, like, yeah, these people are kind of hooked on this lifestyle.
Right.
My thing is like, to each his own.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, if there are no laws being broken and they're getting paid and they're willing to do this instead of going to get a job delivering pizzas, then, you know, good on you.
Frankly, if they can get my pizza to me and stay safe, not harm other people, and deliver a delicious pizza still, I don't care if they're in the midst of a drug trial right then.
Here's another thing I didn't know
that
I thought was interesting in this article is that they kind of put the pedal to the metal when it comes to these trials because a U.S. drug patent only lasts for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're hung up for a decade in research and testing, which can happen, then they don't start it over once you get it approved. You've got only 10 years left to make, you know, serious money.
Right.
So they speed these things along.
They do. Now, if you're running it through a university, they generally have – well, universities have a reputation for being total sticklers when it comes to institutional review boards, right?
Right.
So as a result – I think that a lot of drug companies have found that if you run it instead through a private organization that does the clinical trials for you, then all of a sudden you can walk around a lot of these ethical guidelines or, you know, safe conditions. And yet again, outsourcing to private contractors for money, it's the way to get around things. Exactly.
Awful.
So that's medical experimentation. This is a really cool article. It's slightly outside of the How Stuff Works voice. Robert Lamb put his all into it.
He put his Lamb stamp on it.
He did. At the very least, you got to read page zero, and I defy you to just read page zero.
Yeah, for those of you out there, page zero is really page one. That's the insider lingo here.
Yeah, and Chuck and I have worked here for more than 2 years, and we've still never figured out why they call it page zero.
I have no idea.
So if you want to read page zero of how human experimentation works, you can type in human experimentation in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. And I guess you could say that leads us to listener mail.
Yes, Josh, this is about narco states.
I remember narco states.
I'm going to call it narco state email.
Okay.
This is from Krister, who I actually had to write Krister back and say, are you a boy or a girl? Because I'd never heard that name, and Krister's like a dude. So Krister says, I currently live in Juarez, Mexico.
What?
Yeah, exactly, because we covered Juarez pretty thoroughly.
Yeah.
It is sad to stand out as a dangerous narco zone rather than being recognized for a decent achievement. But things here are indeed pretty crazy. Murders are super high, and I've tragically lost some friends throughout the year. As if this wasn't enough, even the government is messing with us, as I had an experience last July. My parents happen to own a clothing shop, and we were asked by some federal agents to give out a big amount of money, $250,000
Holy
to be
cow.
Exact. Just because, of course, my family refused to do so, a week later, they came with an order to close and empty my parents' shop and locked up my dad. We gave a smaller amount just so he was released, and we thought it would just end there. But to our surprise, a month later, we were surrounded by about 20 agents holding an apprehension order to take both of my parents, charging them for supposedly commercializing pirated clothing, which was a trumped-up charge.
Good Lord.
Essentially, I know. I was left alone with my three younger brothers for more than 3 months until the agent on top agreed to let them out of prison for $50,000, and the case was closed. It was a sick experience, and thank God it was finally over. Throughout those 3 months of grief, you guys were right there with me, and you were a nice distraction from my awful situation at a time that was clearly troubling, and I want to thank you for that. It was probably doesn't mean the same to you guys, but it was helpful in some way for me. I no longer want to live in this place, and I'm just looking forward to moving to the U.S. as soon as possible.
I'll bet.
I know. So we just wanted to share this and say Merry Christmas. So we had some angry people write in, by the way, about me saying we should just drop the borders and let anyone in. And I just want to say to those folks, think about people like Krister here who are just dying to get to the United States because of stuff like this. And the U.S. represents, you know, something great to them, and we shouldn't forget that.
Yeah.
So that's I'm on my high horse, and now I'm getting off of it.
Thanks, Chuck.
Do we have a horse effect? No?
Let's see. We've got something close to it, and that would be...
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode entitled How Human Experimentation Works, originally podcast at HowStuffWorks.com on December 31st, 2009. If you'd like to contact Josh or Chuck, you can email them at StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at HowStuffWorks.com as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org.
Oh boy, ran out of time to talk. Downtown Soulville Show, Mr. Finewine. Let's hear some music.
It's kinda getting next to me. Whoa, so little woman.